Okay.
Thank you, Maria, for continuing this interview. Can I take you now to the bicentennial year and the Armidale Arboretum, which you were involved with?
Right. So what happened with that was Bill McCarthy, who was the local member at the time, Thelma was a member of the Bicentennial Committee in Sydney, and Bill invited Marilyn and I to design...
Marilyn Pidgeon
and I to design the Arboretum. And Marilyn would take the eastern part and I would take the western part. And he said, we'll have a budget of about $20,000. And so you have to try and bring it in, around about that amount. In the meantime, the council, I think, had also enlisted John Wrigley to do the water gardens. Mm-hmm. And John, of course, had designed the botanic gardens in Coffs Harbour and also Canberra. And he was a very well-known native plant person. And I think that his quote was about 60,000, and so we had the rest of it, right? Yeah. And there was an engineer on council at the time who we were liaising with, and he told us that we would have two gardeners to maintain the gardens. And so Marilyn and I virtually worked round the clock then, because we had only had a few weeks to do this. And so we turned up with the plans, and then they sent them off and we got the grant. So you have to realise the context of this. A few years earlier, and I think Peter Maguire may have been involved, there was a move to develop a wool village, and I suspect it was to be on Peter Maguire's land up near the airport. And a small consortium of local people got together, and I don't know if they actually put in the application, but they certainly had an application for a wool village for the bicentenary, and it was going to cost $10 million. And the and Bill explained that the bicentennial money was being divided up per head of population. So Armidale, having a population of 20,000 at the time, was eligible for $200,000. And that was, we couldn't ask for more than that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so we got the grant, and we started supervising the work on the arboretum. The water gardens went in. There's a natural spring on the arboretum where the water gardens are, and originally that spring fed a few small water holes. And I don't know for sure, but I suspect that there were Aboriginal encampments on those little water holes, because we know it's recorded that there was a big fight near the railway station and at one stage. And those small water holes went down through Armidale High's grounds and down towards the township, right? Mm. And so it would have been a natural place for encampments. Mm. Also being high ground, it would have been good vantage. Mm. Anyway, and of course we know that the Gumbangi, the Dungari, Milleroy and the Anawan used to get together in the summertime for ceremonies and things. And anyway, the council, when building the water gardens, they diverted the spring so that it came out where the big pond is, so that it would fill the big pond. And then there was a pump that pumped the water up to the waterfall, the top pond, and then it fell down towards, and then there's a big pipe coming up, so any overflow goes into the stormwater system. And then I designed the top part to be a series of regional gardens, so New South Wales, Victoria, Tasmania, and set about planting. I had the TAFE got a grant and for mulch, and I got the boys to mulch big garden, and also there was water laid on, but the water wasn't really accessible because of the way the councillor put in the pipes, and I don't quite understand what was going on there. So, you know, I enlisted the help of anyone I could to help with the plantings, and we got it going. The other side, I designed a sensors garden for blind people, and the council organised for a children's project where the children could carve designs into bricks and then they would fire them, and that was the outer wall of that garden. And we had the walls built, and then I got Armidale High kids to come in and fill the gardens with soil, which they weren't really keen on doing, but anyway, I think they were told do it or else. And I did a lot of research on gardens for the disabled, playgrounds for the disabled. We went to Sydney and I had a look at, I think it might be Nobby's Playground or something like that. And so I suggested that we have a playground for disabled kids, you know, above the shelter shed, right? And so, you know, the whole thing started to take place. The council was a bit, I wouldn't say not cooperative, but a bit just, you know, not all that forthcoming. And I found that if I worked with the workers themselves, that was really good, right? What happened then, a couple of weeks or a week before the official opening, Marilyn and I were told that the gardeners were withdrawn. And we would only get mowing. And there would be no one to maintain the gardens. And, you know, it was hard, but what do you do? Because I put so much work into it and continued to after that. So after that, I did a lot of the maintenance myself on the native gardens. And I also, for Arbor Day and I think National Wattle Day and stuff, I invited schools to pay for a grove of trees and a plaque, right? Well, the council put in the trees, but not the plaques. So nobody knows who donated what. And it was just a travesty, basically. Poe Woodland was working with council at the time, and I mean, I had an international peace grove for international students. I mean, you know, there were all sorts of things which I'd started, but absolutely no recognition at all, and just pilloried basically by the council. And anyway, so I ended up walking away. It's just, you know, there wasn't any point in continuing with it.
That's very disappointing, Maria. Now, at about the same time, you were developing your special interest in wattle. And clarifying Wattle Day. Can you tell us more about that?
So again, we go to Thelma. So about 86, I think, Thelma came to me with her daughter, Janice, and Janice was working as a primary school teacher. Mm-hmm. And Janice said, we've come to you because we know your native plants and everything. And she said, we need to know the words of the Wattle Day song. And I said, oh, gosh, Thelma. I said, I don't know. And as it turned out, see, I went to a Catholic school, and Catholic schools didn't, they didn't do any of that stuff. But the public schools did, right? I said, all right, give me some time and I'll do some research. So I did. And gosh, I then opened up this enormous treasure trove of all this wattle stuff, all the wattle poems, the songs, through school magazines and through various archives. And some of the archivists were fantastic. And so I realised that there was this amazing history, and so I wrote a letter to the Prime Minister with a couple of recommendations that, of course, I found out, that's right, I'd written, first of all, maybe it was that one, I said that our floral, or that National Wattle Day be celebrated, something like that. And I got a letter back from the Minister for the Arts who said, oh, well, actually, you know, our national emblem has never been formally gazetted. So I then turned around and wrote another letter saying, please formally gazette, and National Wattle Day. And that sort of started that ball rolling. And then I went on to Australia All Over, Ian McNamara, Macca, and asked for his help. And unbelievably, right, all the letters started arriving. So I got the sheaf this thick, all the letters from different people who have all these anecdotes and, stories from their childhood, copies of poems and so on, all came out of the woodwork. And and so I started putting it all together. Anyway, so what happened then in about April, I think, of 88, the Labor Party had a get-together at the racecourse, some big Labor Party do at the racecourse. And they had invited Graham Richardson, who was a bigwig in the Labor Party at the time. And so I contacted Thelma and I said, Thelma, look, I believe that you're having this event and Graham Richardson is coming. Can I please have 5 minutes with Graham Richardson at the racecourse? And they let me have 5 minutes with Graham Richardson at the racecourse. So then, on a park bench at the racecourse, in 5 minutes, with him sitting next to me, and me with my folder, and I'd highlighted, and I had to convince him that doing the emblem and Wattle Day were important for the bicentenary.
Well done.
How I did that, I have no idea. I probably wouldn't be able to do it today, but Anyway, a couple of months later, I got the letter saying they're going to do it Wattle Day. Not Wattle Day, the emblem.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, but Wattle Day is another thing, right? And so I was then invited to Canberra for the official ceremony of the emblem, and I planted a tree with Hazel Hawke and a few other people in the Botanic Gardens. And at that time I went out to dinner with the staff, and I said that I was going to write this book, and they said, we'll publish it.
That's wonderful. That was your first of, by my count, 6 books, Maria?
Something like that, yes. So that was Wattle. And I was very... I then set about trying to get illustrations, right? And I loved J.H. Maiden's Trees of New South Wales and Margaret Flockton's drawings. And so I asked permission from the Botanic Gardens to use Margaret Flockton's drawings in that book, and I love that book because it's these drawings are just magnificent. And so, you know, that book went out there, and so I came.
So the Wattles were the first of your books. I think you've written 2 on Corias, is that right?
No, just 1.
And on acacias.
So what happened, I wrote...
Obviously, being Wattles.
Yeah, so 2010, I did the Coria book, right? because I was still running the Coria study group, and the Australian Plant Society doesn't have a publishing arm. And they said, look, if you want a publishing, then you'll have to find your own publisher. And it's strange how life does twists and turns. When my kids were very little, I had a little play group. And April Chase was one of the members of that play group. And her husband was working for council as the deputy of... second in charge of the gasworks, and he'd been promised the job when his superior retired. He'd been promised the job of right. Anyway, when his superior retired, council did the dirty on him and put someone else in, right? So they ended up leaving the area and went on to much bigger things, right? I mean, gosh, they're so well healed now, and they wouldn't have been nearly like that if they'd stayed here. But he went on to be manager of Shell in Fiji, and you know, all sorts of really. And then he's bought a factory in Sydney, and Averill decided to become a literary agent. So I wrote to Averill and said, "Listen, Averill, I want to, you know, publish this Corria book. Can you find me a publisher?" And so she became my agent, and she found me Rosenberg, and that's how the Corria book got published. And then a couple of years later, Rosenberg asked if I'd do a second edition of the Wattle book, but this time with colour. Lot of colour photographs, right? So that's the second edition of the... And I called it a celebration of Wattle because the first one, they left out my big chapter of actually celebrating Wattle Day, right? So I didn't finish about that celebration in Canberra. I talked to Senator Ray at that celebration and I said, "What happened to Wattle Day?" And he said, "Oh, no, you'll have to do that yourself." And I said, anyway, so then I set about writing to every state premier and chief minister. And the first one that replied, "Yes, that's fine," was the Northern Territory, would you believe? The last one was Queensland. I think I might have missed about 2 premiers in between because they kept changing their premiers. And anyway, so I just wore them down. as I got a negative letter, I'd write back with more arguments, right? Gosh, I had energy in those days. And and so I wore them down, and finally I got the last letter from Queensland, bundled them up, sent them off to Canberra, to Senator Bray, and said, now do it. Here they are. And they did.
Now, that was under the auspices of Australian Plant Society?
No.
It was purely Maria.
Purely me. I've been very disappointed and I said to the society, I said, look, this is your day. This is something that you need to build up but they're not a very proactive organisation, let's put it that way. I once was invited to speak at the Bendigo conference and on future trends. And so, and this is going back to about 86 or something. And I said, firstly, you need to change the name from the Society for Growing Australian Plants to the Australian Plant Society or Australian Native Plant Society, right?
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, you need to combine all the magazines into one edition, right, with state roundups, because Queensland people don't know what New South Wales people are doing, South Australian people don't know what West Australian people are doing, right, because you're all, I said, the third thing, you need to start looking at some merchandise. I said, you've got some wonderful artists in the society, and you could easily start producing some merchandise, because at that time there was nothing. And there were a number of things that I suggested anyway. Most of it fell on deaf ears, and I think Canberra was the first one to change the name a few years later, and they changed their name to the Australian Native Plant Society. And then gradually the others, mm-hmm. The society, the magazines have never changed because Victoria and New South Wales had a feud on about the magazine, and New South Wales wanted to keep a stranglehold on the magazine. So that never changed. They missed out completely on the merchandise, and they could have made a lot of money, but... And I got the reputation of being a rat bag, anyway.
However, Maria, in 2018 you were awarded a member of the Order of Australia.
Yes.
Can you tell me the background to that?
Well, crazily about that was the person who nominated me, and I know who it was, nominated me for my community work for the Ratepayers Association and the local area committee and a lot of my community work, right? But I gave her my CV, and when the people on that committee looked at it, they decided that my environmental work was more important, and so they gave me my OIM for conservation and the environment, which I'm so thrilled about, because a lot of people get their OIM for work in the community, right? And it doesn't seem all that important, but conservation and the environment, that puts me up a step ahead, right? So it's funny, isn't it? So that's what happened there.
Now, finally, of course, because this is for the Australian Garden History Society, can we trace through your membership of that organisation? Australian Garden History.
Oh, yes. 2016. Yes. So I became interested in the historic homes. I had been a member of the Australian Garden History Society years ago when it first formed in Sydney. And I was in fact asked to be the after-dinner speaker at an event in Moree. that they were running. They were running a weekend, right? And so I went to Moree. I was allowed to sort of join the tour. And at that time, that absolutely blew my mind, because the wealth in these places out in the bush was astonishing. And so I guess that was always in the back of my head.
Now, we're talking late 1990s here,
We're talking about 1980s, early 80s. I was really just starting to make a name here as a native plant person. And, so I thought... I wouldn't mind, you know, joining the AGHS, and that's, so I came along to, I think, a few meetings and went on a couple of trips and so on, and then became the newsletter editor and,
And now you're joining the National Management Committee.
Well, that's the next step, I suppose, because I want to learn a little bit more about how the whole organisation runs, right? Mm-hmm. And if I can make a contribution, I will, but I realise that it's a fairly entrenched sort of... You sort of get the impression, a bit like the National Trust, you get the impression that there is a bit of an entrenched hierarchy.
I might wind up here and thank you for such a thorough and really frank interview, Maria.
Oh,
that is really splendid. Okay, all done.